And I'm really looking forward to when we have more open, broad public discussions so that we can clarify anything that is fuzzy or too broad a statement to make. I thought about that in writing the previous segment, as well as this last thought that force applied to an infant is, in fact, torture, and that needs to be discussed because I don't know that all of us understand that. We've discussed before, getting back to our point of the economy being a tool for, quote, for managing us, which makes it a political tool. We've discussed before, quoting Albert O. Hirschman's The Passions and the Interests, Political Arguments for Capitalism Before Its Triumph, how the concept of the economy became a tool in the hands of the 18th century incipient Plato's tribesmen to impose order, quote unquote, on the political world. In a chapter he calls Improving the Political Order, Hirschman writes, quote, from the potter he had been in the Old Testament, God became a master clockmaker, le grand horloger. The implication was, of course, that once he had built the clock, it was going to run entirely by itself. Stewart's watch equals economy, shares with the clock equals universe, the quality of being a finely built mechanism that should not be tampered with by arbitrary outside interference. But by choosing the image of a watch, he manages to convey both the impossibility of arbitrary and careless handling and the need for frequent corrective moves by the solicitous and expert statesman, unquote, from Albert O. Hirschman's book. It was to sentiments such as this that Prince was reacting in his song Act of God. This concept was adapted in the aftermath of the French Revolution into the fervent new religion of Plato, i.e., the addition of an irrational destination, to which understanding we owe Karl Popper's The Open Society and Its Enemies, Volume 1, The Spell of Plato. Plato, too, recommended course corrections. He called this tempering the ideal with the possible. So Proudhon could not know the degree to which his prediction of feudal chaos, if we did not demand our right to own, be responsible for our own intellectual development, feudal chaos would become reality. Proudhon could not see the degree to which the managers that scratched and clawed and dirty dealed their way to ascendancy would entrench themselves by means of a global totalitarian self and mutually reinforcing structure of bureaucratic states. Proudhon saw and tried to engage in dialogue with the argument of the managers, tried to move them to reconsider in order to avert, as Nikola Tesla likewise tried less than a century later, feudal chaos. Here is one of his arguments from an earlier section that we've yet to read as we're taking him out of sequence. I don't think he'd object. The following quote is from a section titled, Property is impossible because if it exists, society devours itself. And every time he uses the word property, we have to hear his definition of the word, which is the sum of the abuses of property, so that we are on the same page with him and not confused about what in fact he is saying. And this is a title, his title, Property is Impossible because if it exists, society devours itself. It brings to mind the Ovid story of Erisichthon, which we mentioned quite a bit because it's so potent. Most recently in our November 6, 2016 show, at least when I wrote those words most recently, in which we said Erisaithon was punished with the disease ever-eatingness by the goddess of the harvest for cutting down her favorite tree around which the dryads danced. As we read this quote from Proudhon, let's recall our Shakespeare. We cannot allow ourselves to be kept, to be forever made dependent, made to forestall our gifts that make us self-sufficient. We cannot allow others, a tiny 10,000 others globally, to decide who shall live and who shall die. That life that can't provide for itself can't survive and cannot create the abundance that returns to us our shared paradise.